Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solaria Report. This is John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. Today is March 16th. We're recording for publication tomorrow, March 17th. We're through the Ides of March, and we're still alive.
Yeah.
And our theme is dial down the shriekometer. I have never seen it this bad. I've lived through lots of shriekometer. I have never seen it this bad.
Yeah, this is crazy. And it shows up in the stories, a lot of which don't make sense.
Right, right.
It's just like there's so much dissonance that nothing, it's even hard to pitch stories. And we'll see this again and again and again.
Well, but the one thing I want to underscore is this much incoherence is very expensive. There's a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort going into creating it.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
It's a big job program. Right.
Yeah, and it costs a lot of time trying to figure out what are they saying in this story?
Right.
What's this article mean? It's all across the board.
Right.
No. But you'll see. This is going to be a slog today. I'm warning you. Because of the dissonance and because of the shriekometer.
Okay, I'm planning on having some fun, so.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Let's dive
in.
Well,
we're going to lead off with a guy who's been on Money and Markets before, and I like more and more and more.
Uh-huh.
Archbishop Vigano, globalists have fomented war in Ukraine to establish the tyranny of the New World Order. There's a lot in this piece. I'm going to zoom in so we can see it. There he is, this guy. He knows the score.
Yep.
After a bit of an intro here, he says he ties together the Ukraine and the pandemic. Very interesting. If we look at what is happening in Ukraine, we realize that respect for each other's rights has been completely ignored. It should not surprise us that pluralism and freedom of speech, so praised in countries that claim to be democratic, are daily disavowed by censorship and intolerance towards opinions not aligned with the official narrative. Manipulations of this kind have become the norm during the so-called pandemic, to the detriment of doctors, scientists, and dissenting journalists who have been discredited and ostracized for the mere fact of daring to question the effectiveness of experimental serums. So right there, he ties together, you know, he's saying this is just a continuation, the Ukraine here, of the pandemic. He says the oligarchy shows its tentacles in the UN, NATO, and the World Economic Forum, and so on, and these philanthropic institutions such as George Soros' Open Society and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And the key point here, all these entities are private and answer to no one but themselves, and at the same time, they have the power to influence national governments. So private control, but public influence. And he goes
right.
on
and
like
if,
that.
If you look at the new WHO treaty that they're working on, we're talking about the ability of private control to then dictate to government machinery what it will and will not do completely. Right.
Right. Right. And he's on to that. That's a very good piece.
Yeah.
So that's a good piece that's worthy of reading because it's like, listen, Ukraine is just, it's the next step. It's the next logical step from these criminals.
I've known some people who wanted to interview him, and it's a little bit like working with somebody who's in the witness protection program.
He's a very brave man. He is. Right. To talk like that. Boy, I mean, you saw right there. He comes out. He's not afraid to take the gloves off and name names. Bill and Melinda Gates, George Soros, you know, these are the people who are up to no good.
Well, this is what a real archbishop should be doing.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
You're supposed to just be yet another organ of the powers that be to soft soap and to promote the party line.
Well, but I always find his letters. The first time I read his first letter was very inspiring because I thought, you know, this is what a man of God would do.
Yeah.
So he's the real thing.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. The more I see from him, the more I like. Anyway. Continuing on the war in Ukraine, the next story from the Journal. This is probably the most coherent story from the Journal we'll see this week. Russian prosecutors warn Western companies of arrests and asset seizures. Okay, so let's get into this. Russian prosecutors supposedly have issued warnings to Western companies in Russia, threatening to arrest corporate leaders there who criticize the government or to seize assets of companies that withdraw from the company, according to people familiar with the matter. So unnamed sources. And you can see sort of the list of companies here. It's all the usual suspects. Coke, Procter & Gamble, IBM, you know, so on and so forth, and go down. Other companies have moved to transfer executives out of Russia because of the threatening arrests. Other people, so not the same, not the first set of unnamed sources, other people familiar with the matter, so other unnamed sources. So for a little diversity there. Last Sunday, and this is where we get into the controversy, like, did this really happen? After the online publication of this article, Russia's embassy in Washington retweeted it, stamped with a red fake news label. So Russia's like, what are you talking about with these prosecutors? This isn't really going on. But let's go to the backstory of this and see what these companies did before the prosecutors in Russia supposedly came out and did this. Coke last week said it would suspend operations in Russia. Restaurant owner Yum last week said it was temporarily closing its 70 company-owned KFC locations and 50 more from Pizza Hut. IBM chair and chief executive Krishna wrote a blog that the company has suspended all operations in Russia. And McDonald's is closing roughly 850 restaurants in the country and said it would continue paying the 62,000 people it employs in Russia. So it's hard to, I believe the part about the companies closing. The controversy is, did the prosecutors threaten to arrest them or didn't they? I don't know.
You know, there's clearly a separation going on, but when you dive into the detail, it's hard to find out what the facts are, and it's clear there's disinformation involved. But there is a separation, right. And if you're an American company, you're going to want to get your senior employees out for sure.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to say that McDonald's is going to pay 62,000 Russians, because I was thinking that the pull out of the U.S. companies and the Western media is going to create massive unemployment.
Yeah, but the sequence here is important. I mean, undoubtedly, the companies were closing businesses in Russia first, and then, if the story is to be believed, the prosecutors came next.
Right. Right.
But we know that either way, the companies are closing businesses. The companies are giving up revenue.
Right.
Right?
Right. You know. Although, if you look at what happened with the media companies, I haven't read the Russian legislation on, you know, sort of criminal prosecution for fake news. But, you know, I could certainly see why the Western media would pull out immediately.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Well, that was a separate story that we covered last week where Russia's going to, right, they're going to prosecute people for misinformation. And the very first thing is CNN, ABC, MSNBC, they just all vanish like cockroaches. Right. They're like, the light's on, we got to go.
Right.
You know. Anyway, hard to know what's going on with the prosecutors and those companies. But the companies are definitely towing the party line with the Ukraine for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it looks to me, part of this is the U.S. is doing everything it can to be in a position to escalate this.
Yes.
So.
Right. Okay. Right.
And not just with economic sanctions, by trying to goad different actions by different countries in Europe to try and accelerate what's going on. Anyway, we'll get to it.
Right. Different countries and different companies.
Right.
You know, they're pulling out all the stops short of troops on the ground.
Right? Well, they want to be able to blame Russia.
Yeah, right. That's clearly it's feeding a narrative.
Right.
Yeah. But let's go to the next story in Ukraine. This is from Mish. A brick house in an international dollar default by the United States. I'm going to zoom in. He quotes this guy, Wolfgang Munchau, of the Euro Intelligence founder, who says, Munchau does, the West has taken the biggest gamble in the history of economic warfare. We, the West, have frozen the assets of the Russian central bank. But we did not think this through. For a central bank to freeze the accounts of another central bank is a really big deal. Economically, what this means is that the entire transatlantic West has defaulted on our most important asset, our fiat money. We have turned the dollar and the euro and everything that is denominated in those currencies into de facto risky assets. The probability of default of a dollar or a euro-denominated asset can no longer be credibly put at zero. With a single decision, we have created tail risk. So it's hard to avoid the conclusion, you know, here that we're moving away from the dollar. And then the conclusion from Mish, this is Mish now talking, not Munchau. The U.S. did not default on interest payments. Rather, it stole dollar reserves of another country. And that's the grim reality, is that the U.S. has stolen
the right, money. And the U.S. is saying we reserve the right to steal dollars no matter where in the world they reside. So right. A dollar in Zurich is really held at Citibank in the U.S. and can be seized at any time. So dollars are only as good as your ability to do whatever the U.S. tells you to do.
Right.
It's complete payment system control. And it's the beginning of the complete control grid. And what's interesting is, and the reason I wanted to look at this article from Mish, because I thought he did a good job, but it's part of a drumbeat. You're starting to see article after article asking the question, is Biden under orders to destroy the dollar system?
It's a legitimate question.
It's a very legitimate question.
These are not unforeseeable side effects.
Right.
Like you're freezing. Let's back up. The purpose of settlement, it's just to settle transactions, right?
Right.
That's why Russia has assets here. It's just, you know, because in a debt-based monetary system, you need to settle transactions between dissimilar, you know, organizations or countries. You're not supposed to play games with your reserve currency.
Right. But what the U.S. is now saying is, we will not let you use your dollars to pay off your dollar debt. And
right.
Therefore, we will call you in default on your dollar debt, even though we refuse to let you pay your debt.
Right.
Which is why Russia is saying we're going to use rubles. And if you look at this and many of the other things they're doing with the dollar system sanction, you know, it's the one thing I've ever seen that made the Chinese system look trustworthy. So the idea of the now the Saudis are working with the Chinese to take yuan for oil settlement,
right.
And they're, you know, and everybody's moving, and it almost is as though the goal here is to try and make the Chinese system look statesmanlike and reliable.
Yeah, it is, or if not the Chinese system, then some alternative system.
Could be the pound. Could be special
drawing rights. Could be SDRs.
Right.
It won't be the pound.
Well,
I don't think we're going to move.
I sent you the article about their new. They just happened to have a new big gas deposit discovered in the North Sea, backed by Warren Buffett.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't look at that yet.
The headline is Britain now has all the gas it needs. Now that they've cut off Germany's gas, Britain is rolling in gas.
Right. And the U.S. Right. discovered $1 trillion of minerals in Afghanistan days before that became the longest war in U.S. history.
Right.
It's remarkable how these discoveries happen at key times. It's quite astonishing.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah,
I knew you'd be thrilled that, believe it or not, they have a sales agreement with BP. I know that'll surprise you.
You know, BP makes an odd appearance in another story later. Let's just put that one on hold for a time being. We'll get back to that. Hold that thought about VP. Okay, next story here about Chinese Foreign Ministry demands truth about U.S. biomilitary labs in Ukraine. Boy, is this a big story. China has urged the U.S. to make full clarification of its biological militarization activities at home and abroad and accept multilateral inspections, said Chinese Foreign Ministry on Tuesday following media reports that revealed a network of about 30 biological laboratories were formed in the Ukraine at the request of the U.S. Zhao cited media reports as saying that the biological laboratories store large quantities of dangerous viruses, and Russia has found during its military operations that the U.S. is using these facilities for biomilitary products. According to data released by the U.S., so this is the U.S.'s own data, the DOD has absolute control over 26 biological laboratories in the Ukraine. And then the Chinese guy says, get this. These military activities in the Ukraine, biological military activities in Ukraine, are just the tip of the iceberg, said Zhao, noting that the U.S. DOD controls a total of 336 biological laboratories in 30 countries in the name of reducing biosecurity risks and strengthening global public health. Wow.
China's- so I believe for the last for quite a while, and the whole period which I call the Great Poisoning, there has been significant chemical and biological warfare going on around the world, including targeted at food supply.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that this network of labs is the predominant potential source for all of that. And I think the world is at a breaking point when they're tired of pretending it's not going on. So the Russian invasion gives an opportunity to bring this up and discuss it. And a lot of it is highly documented by the DOD's own website and documentations, because this is all funded with taxpayers' money. So this is not secret. It's not talked a lot about. There's no media coverage of it. But it's been going on for quite a long, and it's quite a while, and it's very real.
Yeah, and one of the things that supports your contention that it's deliberate is if you look at a map of where these labs are located, they're always on the border cities. They're never centrally located. So they're on the border of the Ukraine and Russia.
Right.
Right? A lot of them. And I think that's what China's pointed out.
Well, if I was any country that had 30 DOD biowarfare labs on my border, I'd be very nervous.
Yeah, I would too.
Right. And not just nervous about the health of, you know, our population, but about the food supply.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Right. All it takes is one biowarfare attack to destroy, you know, in that area, destroy 25% of the world's wheat supply.
And, you know, you see these stories that more and more the U.S. say, oh, there's going to be a false flag by Russia. But boy, this is not looking, this is a volatile mix of stories.
Well, you know, one of the reasons it's a volatile mix of story, and I have to make a correction, I'd say the per capita income, which is what I found on several sources for the Ukraine, was 1,400. The World Bank says no, 3,700. But I still say it's a society in relative economic implosion. When you have these kinds of facilities in a country that's dealing with this kind of economic implosion, and then you add military invasion, you know, a lot can go wrong that's just simply an accident.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing with some pretty dangerous material here.
Right.
So, yeah.
And we talked about that last week where it's like, well, there is such a thing as inadvertence. But then in a pressurized environment, the tendency to read an intent to these accidents is, you know, irresistible almost.
Right. But unfortunately, I hate to say this because I'm American and I'm by nature a very patriotic person. I believe the United States is poisoning the world. And I litigated with the Department of Justice. I was poisoned 8 times. I had to do a lot of research on poisoning in the process of detoxing. And one of the things I learned is they love this tactic. They use it all the time. It's a big, you know, poisoning people, you know, as groups or individuals. This is a very popular tactic. And yet for most of it, we can't even fathom it's going on. When I first started to deal with it, I couldn't fathom that it could happen or it could happen to me. And it took me many years not only to fathom it, but to study and realize, oh, they're doing this to people all the time.
Yeah. You know, I think I live in a rural area and would go to town, you know, my town of 10,000 people, and sit in my gym and look out the window. And I noticed one day, I was like, all these people in this rural area are walking around. They all have limps.
Right.
You know, a big percentage of the population is limping around. And I shared that with you, and you immediately said they've been poisoned.
Right. Right. And there are things they can do about it. But first, you have to realize, oh, I've been poisoned. If you go to the doctors have no idea, you know, sort of what this is and how to deal with it. It's not in their framework.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to avoid the conclusion about poisoning after what we've seen with the alleged vaccinations, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the people who first got a hold of the problem with heavy metals toxicity and what to do about it were the vaccine injured. And it was because of the vaccine injured that I was able to find a whole bunch of doctors and healthcare professionals who had learned about heavy metals toxicity and what to do about it. And, you know, and so it was that group that really, because the part of the vaccine problem was a heavy metals toxicity problem.
No kidding.
Yeah. Hmm. So all I can tell you is on my first heavy metals You know, one of the ways you test for this stuff is you do 24-hour urine tests. And my first heavy metals test, if you're more than 1.5 on lead, you're considered toxic on lead. I was 47. And the doctor I was working with said, "Can you walk? I'm amazed you can walk." I said, "Yeah, I just got back from the gym." Anyway, so I started at 47 and I got it finally down to 5. And all I can tell you is the difference between having 47 and 5 felt to me like 30 IQ points.
No kidding.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not saying it was 30 IQ points, but that's what it felt like. You cannot deal when you're heavy metals toxic. So I had, I was toxic with aluminum. I was toxic with arsenic. I'd been poisoned several times with arsenic. And then I was heavy, lead was the biggest problem. But when you are heavy metal toxic, you can't think clearly. You can't function clearly. It is much easier to defraud somebody or trick them into believing it's a real pandemic and they need a booster if they're heavy metals toxic. It's my personal experience.
Wow.
Right.
Right.
So, I just have to put a plug. Everybody, get your family in every year, do a 24-hour heavy metals urine test and see how you're doing.
Yeah, I might want to do that myself.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Space, military, and global turf wars. You're going to have to make sense of this story. I've read it a couple of times. I don't know what's up. Okay. Counterpunch. Japan declares Okinawa a combat zone. Okay. On December 23rd of last year, the Japanese government informed Kyoto News Service that in the event of a Taiwan contingency, the U.S. military, with the help of the Japanese self-defense forces, would set up a string of attack bases in the southwest islands of Japan. So they again goes on here to define these terms. Southwest islands means Okinawa, the Okinawa prefecture. Taiwan contingency presumably means an attempt by China to regain control of Taiwan by military force. In the expression attack bases, attack is understood as attack on China. And after that, I just kind of, what's going on in the story, Catherine?
I'm not sure. And what it tells me is that Japan, it tells me two things. Japan is seriously worried about China moving in on Taiwan. And they are positioning to do, they're positioning to do a lot more defense themselves and spend a lot more on arms. Essentially, they don't trust the United States to be there for them. So they're making every move they can to be prepared. Now, saying that, I also have to tell you, if you look at what's happening between Taiwan and China economically, they just continue to grow more and more interdependent and more and more interdependent. There's no reason for China to have to invade Taiwan. You know, they're steadily invading them economically, and the two countries will grow together so closely that at some point there's just no need for an invasion. So I can't say that China won't invade, but what I will say is that there are many signals coming to me from Asia that says not only, so we have the financial guys saying you can't trust the dollar, but we have everybody in the South China Sea saying you can't trust the United States to support us.
Huh.
So if China, one of the most important things China needs to do for its currency to take a big step up in terms of reserve currency status. Right. And I'm not saying it's going to become the reserve currency status. I'm just saying its market share within the reserve currency system is to be the dominant hegemon in the South China Sea.
Yeah,
that is step number one to creating a great global currency. And what this article signals to me is it's getting closer.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be a major and a huge move. Yeah, agreed.
Well, okay, if you're Vietnam, would you trust the United States? If you can't trust, they just made it clear that their commitments, their legal and contractual commitments vis-a-vis their currency are worthless.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you expect them to show up and support you in a real fight?
Well, if I'm Vietnam, I wouldn't have, this is nothing new.
Right.
If I'm Vietnam. Okay.
Right. Anyway.
Okay. Continuing on with global turf wars, but again on China, this is a video. The CCP is now embedded with the Russian army. So this is a video I'm going to roll here. I'm going to play about a minute of it because it's interesting visual cues. And this is in the Ukraine.
Расскажите, это у вас здесь это жизнь как сейчас?
Ну как боевая обстановка. Сидим, прячемся в подвалах на всякий случай, потому что военные предупредили, что может быть ответка прилететь от Украины. И в принципе она иногда прилетает. Есть попадания по жилым домам. Ну, жертв, слава богу, обошлось тем, что одна бабушка у нас тут погибла, было прямое попадание в дом, а так только разрушение.
Yeah, it took me that much of the clip to convince myself that, yeah, you know, I don't trust anybody anymore, that it is Chinese. Yeah, that's a Chinese guy, and that's definitely a Russian guy.
Right, so the Chinese have now embedded media in the Russian troops invasion, yeah. So rather than Western media covering the troops, it's now we've got the Chinese. And this is part of the separation in the worlds. It's funny. I've been checking in with a Vineyard of the Saker website, and Saker is furious because he keeps saying the Russians are winning militarily but losing public relations. And you can see the Chinese, the Indians, the Russians all grappling with how do they get information out there and how do they deal with the shriekometer? So, you know, it's funny. They've spent a lot of time and effort building up their financial transaction systems, but they haven't spent as much time building up their public communication systems. So,
well, they're the away team in this battle. I mean, it's not the whole world. It's the West. It's
right.
It's the shriekometer, right?
Right.
Yeah, they're going to lose that battle no matter what. I don't care what
they're
going to
lose
it
in the West. I think
yes.
What they want to make sure they don't lose it in the BRIC nations.
I don't think the BRIC nations are. I think they're a little wary of the shriekometer, from what I can tell.
You know something, John? I think everybody's wary of the shriekometer except people who are seriously entrained.
I mean, Brazil, Pakistan, India, nobody has condemned Russia. It's all in the West.
Right.
It's all the shriekometer countries. The BRICS so far are not in shriekometer countries.
Right. But, you know, I have to say that the shriekometer in the West are in this situation building up the strength of the Russian, Indian, Chinese.
And maybe that's why the Saker is so concerned. You know, that would be a bad loss.
No, you know? I think the Saker has a shriekometer toxicity. I think he's ingested too much, you know. he you can't lose your state of amusement when you're dealing with a shriekometer.
No, and you need to have long stretches of time where the TV is off, the radio is off.
Right.
Go hug
a tree. You know, we have this expression on the Soleri team, which, you know, I often have to use when I say I've lost my state of amusement, you know, and then you have to get it back. But I think this situation has caused him to lose his state of amusement. So,
I was at my mom's house and I just have to get out of the room and shut the door when she's watching the BBC. I can't even hear the any of it.
One of the things Saker did in his last posting is he quoted this completely debased, disgusting comment that had been left on his website. And I wanted to write him and said, Saker, you know, don't you understand? That's a paid troll who's working for a defense contractor. He's paid to write that stuff. Why are you taking it seriously?
Yeah, don't take the bait. He gets paid more if you respond to it.
Right, of course. I couldn't believe he, you know. Anyway, but I think Sakers lost his state of amusement. So.
You know what? You can't blame anybody for losing in this environment a state of amusement. You got to get it back, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No,
all right.
No, what?
Next story in Global Turf Wars. Let's hit it. Yuan deposits replace dollars and euro in Russian banks. No kidding. With Russia now officially cut off both from the U.S. dollar and the euro, the state-owned VTB Bank has offered its clientele the opportunity to open Chinese yuan savings accounts that yield a maximum interest rate of 8%. Remember that number, 8%.
Wow.
The country's second biggest bank has been hit by the Western sanctions aimed at the total financial isolation of Russia over war in the Ukraine. Scrolling down a little bit. Listen to this. This is interesting here. Let me try that one more time. There we go. According to the bank, the latest offer will be the most profitable alternative to deposits in other foreign currencies. The annual yield on a three-month deposit is 8% in dollars and 7% in euros. So that 8% puts it on equal footing with dollars, does it not? And euro gets a bit, but look at this. Meanwhile, a six-month ruble deposit currently offers an annual percentage yield of 21%. That is a very interesting story right there.
Right. And what's interesting is if U.S. brokerage accounts made that offer, do you have any idea how much money would end up in rubles?
Oh, a lot.
A lot.
I think a lot.
Right.
But to me, what's interesting is that they're paying, you know, they're paying on yuan at 8%, which puts it on par with what they're paying on the dollar.
Right.
Right. And a little bit less than the euro. I found that surprising, too. The other thing is that the ruble is 21%, which is way out of line, but it's not as far out of line as you might expect, given the charts that we saw last week.
The ruble's falling.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So anybody who's taking that 21% wants protection from another big drop.
Right.
That's what that is. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, those numbers are very interesting. I wish there was a way to keep our eye on them, but anyway, the next story. This is another one you're going to have to interpret for me. What Putin's invasion means for this future of Switzerland. This is from swissinfo.ch. Here we go. The New York Times responded with breaking news on the Swiss government's decision to join sanctions against Russia. Switzerland is setting aside a deeply rooted tradition of neutrality, the New York Times said. The state-owned broadcaster Russia Today spoke of a significant break with neutrality. So everybody agrees Switzerland is breaking with tradition here. And they go through some of these, the significance of the Swiss break on neutrality, but some of them aren't, to me, that persuasive. Switzerland remains military neutral. Well, no kidding. It was always going to be military neutral. The government has radicalized its previous policy. You know, they just carry on with all these. The government had no alternative. This is a precedent. But I just don't really see the significance of what's going on.
This is, in 2014, the U.S. was finally successful in basically getting Switzerland to lose its sovereignty as an offshore haven.
Yeah.
And they basically created a situation where all the investment advisors, if they wanted U.S. money, they had to register with the SEC. They basically shifted Switzerland from a sovereign financial state to something increasingly under the U.S., you know, almost like a subsidiary of the U.S. financial system. And to me, this is the, you know, bears the fruit of that. And for Switzerland to go along with these sanctions says, okay, they're clearly in the U.S. channel, and they're going to do what they're told to do. And I think one of the reasons is, to be blunt, Switzerland is landlocked. So they share borders with Germany, they share borders with France. Their only way out, you know, or their one of their primary ways out to the sea is up the Rhine and out through the Netherlands. They're a landlocked country, and Europe is being divided into you're on our side or their side. So, you know, the world is separating, take your choice. And so any patina of Switzerland being a neutral country, and because remember, they're not in the EU, they're in the Schengen area, but they're not in the EU.
Yep.
So, you know, for the Swiss people, this is a shocking development.
You know, based on what you just said, I would also read this as this is yet another push away from the dollar. If the dollar is no longer a safeism because we'll just freeze your assets, you can't really trust Switzerland either because they're on the dollar
right.
side. So
right.
don't think that Switzerland is a safe haven for your assets there either. That's not going to work. They're another U.S. functionary.
Right. Right.
So
if you are a U.S. citizen, the U.S. asserts jurisdiction worldwide, wherever your money is.
Right.
So there's no, if you're a U.S. citizen, there's no way.
Yeah. The more I see, the more I'm like the tea leaves are starting to point in a certain direction. And it is not toward the dollar. It's away from the dollar.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, I'll say this, John. What is happening is this separation. And it's no doubt going to push a lot of flow into the Asian systems. But if you look at the flow in the West, it's still going to be strong. So to me, it's helping to birth the multipolar world. And it's helping to birth the land empire, and it remains to be seen how this pushes towards a central control grid. So, you know, remember, you're pushing money to the Chinese, who are probably the first ones out with CBDC, a real CBDC.
Yeah. Right.
So the question is, are we pushing flow into Asian and the land empire? Are we pushing flow into the digital control grid? Or both?
Or both.
I don't know. We have to see. But it does look like Biden is working for the Chinese.
It looks like he's working to shunt assets in monetary policy in the direction of the Chinese. Yes.
Right.
And we're going to see that again in some more stories. But first, let's wrap up with the last story in Global Turf Wars. This is from Off Guardian. 10 signs.
Let me just mention one thing. Ask yourself how many people in the Biden cabinet are citizens of Israel. How many dual passport citizens do we have? Including the Secretary of the Treasury.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah.
And Secretary of the Treasury, formerly of the San Francisco Fed, formerly head of the chairman of the Board of Governors, Janet Yellen. Yeah.
Right, yeah. But I had one subscriber wrote in and said their guess was 12 people in the cabinet in the White House at least had dual passports.
Wow.
And what that means is they've got an out. Yeah.
Boy, that's rather sobering number.
Well, my guess is it's 70 plus in Congress, if not more.
You're kidding me.
No. No. This is, we did a Solari report with Cynthia McKinney on the Constitution and defending and protecting the Constitution. I did a lot of Solari reports on why a constitutional convention was a bad idea. But McKinney was adamant because she had been a congressman for one or two terms, then got thrown out, then won and came back in for another. And she said the number one problem in Congress was dual citizenship. She said, both at a senior level in any administration as well as in Congress, you have way too many people who have dual citizenship, and it is a serious problem. And they sign oaths. They sign oaths with AIPAC.
Right.
You know, that are basic contracts that they're going to vote, you know, the way AIPAC says and not the way, you know, their constituents want. So
there's some
The dual citizenship, one of the first reforms I would make is I would cancel all dual citizenships.
Yeah. All right, back to the Off Guardian. 10 signs the war in Ukraine is part of the Great Reset. I get these, but not all of them. I find some more persuasive than others. I present below several ways in which the current conflict between Russia and Ukraine is the next catalyst For World Economic Forum's Great Reset Agenda, I would say the Federal Reserve's Great Reset Agenda, but anyway. One, unprecedented disruption to global supply chains. Yep, that's for sure going on. Two, downsizing the workforce. Not so sure. Three, the war has reinforced the centrality of the UN's sustainable development goals and net zero emissions, which lie at the heart of the Great Reset. Yep, totally on board with that one.
Yep.
Four, food shortages created by the war will offer a major boon to the synthetic biology industry. For sure, I see that going on. Anyway, yeah. You get the idea. There's 10 reasons there. It's sort of like the first story with Archbishop Vigano.
Right.
And it's a continuation.
Right.
Ukraine.
Well, it's very clear that this has been a major effort to cause this to happen. So, a lot of powerful people want to have this war. And it's serving their agenda in a variety of ways. And that's what we're trying to figure out. You know, what are those?
Yeah. Right. Okay. So let's go to another story. This is the first story. The other stories, sort of the categories are a little more fluid now. You can sort of categorize these stories in different ways. But this is another story on, you know, the COVID restrictions, you know, the Ukraine being a continuation here.
Right.
Anyway, this story is from The Defender. COVID restrictions may be winding down, but global control is ramping up. Now, this is another one. It takes a while to get to their point. They said the most strenuous form of critique the media seem to be able to muster sort of in their backing away from COVID now. They're telling policymakers to apologize for getting COVID wrong. In other words, we went overboard on these COVID restrictions. We're kind of sorry, let's move on. You know, we got some things wrong, but it's all okay, right? That's sort of the backdrop to the story. But remember, the story is COVID restrictions are winding down, but the global control is ramping up. It takes a while to get to the real meat of the story. It's down here. Vaccine passports and digital identities full speed ahead. Off-Guardian's Kit Knightley noted on March 1, COVID might be dying, but vaccine passports are very much alive. In late February, he also pointed out that the WHO ominously is working on an international treaty on pandemic prevention and preparedness that would invest the Global Health Organization with the authority to preempt national sovereignty in the management of future pandemics and health challenges. And then Corey Lynn of Corey's Dig says, from education to health records, finance, accounts, travel, contact information, and more will all be linked to your QR code, along with biometrics and fingerprints, then stored on the blockchain. And then Knightley, he says, you know, we have these smart health cards, which is a covert federal vaccine passport rolled out in roughly half the country thus far, including red states that had previously paid lip service to banning vaccine passports. So the march continues on.
Right. So while it looks like there's a quiet period and some people will tell you it's over, this push for the WHO treaty is very, very dangerous because you're talking about a treaty between 170 countries to let the WHO literally declare a pandemic and force them to implement whatever the draconian lockdowns are. And the WHO is now funded primarily by private parties. So you're talking about making Bill Gates the dictator of the world.
Yeah,
a group of foundations, the dictator.
Two thumbs down.
Right. And doing it with a global digital ID or vaccine passport. And we have a draft from November 2021 of their plan for digital certificates. We only have drips and drabs of the treaty they're negotiating with. And they hope to get, you know, people signed up and locked into it this summer. So this needs to be stopped because once that happens, John, and if they get that system in place, then they can mandate whatever they want. And Bill Gates can turn it on and off.
How does that issue get teed up in the U.S.? You mentioned this summer. Are you talking about a bill that would be before Congress?
No, I think they can do it with no legislation. Now, I don't see how you can agree to an international treaty without the Congress approving an international treaty.
That's why I ask how you
especially
get it teed
one
up.
That overrides the Constitution. So I don't see how that's possible. But
I don't either.
Right.
But that is interesting, though. Private parties and the WHO trying to prepare a world plan. But somehow that's got to get into the U.S. bloodstream and teed up before Congress. You can't just do that.
Well, this is a legal issue. Can they by declaring it a health emergency, can they steamroll that process? I don't know.
Boy, they've gotten a lot of traction with the emergency label thus far, haven't they?
Right. Well, that's what Sutradh Bhakti says. He said this is all possible because of the emergency youth authorization. And that allows everybody along the chain to skip through the different scientific or legal requirements. And he's right.
Right. No, he's right. Or legislative requirements for that matter.
Right.
Right. Okay. The next story in FedWatch, this is from the Journal. It's an absolute disaster of a story. It's terribly written. House passes $1.5 trillion omnibus package that includes aid for Ukraine. Okay? So let's just zoom down.
And the aid for Ukraine is tiny.
Yeah, so that's the point here. The House passed $1.5 trillion spending bill that includes emergency aid for Ukraine after Democratic leaders stripped out a contentious COVID-19 aid provision that would have clawed back states' unused coronavirus money to fund the proposal. So the decision to remove the $15.6 billion COVID-19 aid was a dramatic setback for both for Nancy Pelosi, okay, and for Biden. But $15.6 billion is the number to keep in mind there. Remember that number. The package, which funds federal government for the rest of the fiscal year, also provides $13.6 billion in aid for Ukraine. So keep in mind, whether it's 15.6, 13.6, it's 1% of $1.5 trillion. Half of the funds of the Ukraine allocated for humanitarian and economic aid, and the other half for defense in the Ukraine. There keeps focusing on this. $15.6 billion for COVID aid, that was the clawback, remember, and was intended to prepare for future variants or spikes in cases by allowing the government to purchase supplies of monoclonal antibodies, oral antivirals, and vaccines before shortages arise. The spending bill also called for the return of $15.7 billion that was appropriated in previous coronavirus response bills to the Treasury. The story just does, it's just like, what is going on here? House Democrats introduced a standalone COVID bill late Wednesday. So this is a separate bill proposing $15.6 billion in spending. There's that number again, partially offset by $8.6 billion in unused coronavirus funds, but without any clawbacks from state and local governments. After initially planning to vote on it Wednesday, they've kicked the matter to next week. Good luck figuring out what's going on in that story from the Wall Street Journal. It's a disaster. It's a model of horrible writing. And right. It's all, keep in mind, about 1% of the $1.5 trillion bill that just passed.
Well, I will say it this way. The war was used as an excuse to hand out $1.5 trillion to our friends.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. You got it. Yep. And we're going to let's go to the
That's
next story.
That's why when they say there's no money, don't believe them.
No, exactly.
Right.
Okay. So let's cut to the next story that does a little bit better job with this bill. This is from NextGov. Here are 10 major takeaways from the $1.5 trillion omnibus spending bill. Now, I'm going to zoom in and scroll through this. And I'm only going to highlight stuff that talks about, after this initial point here, the amount. So initially, the bill would increase non-defense discretionary spending by 6.7%, while defense spending would jump by about 6%. Okay, so let's get into amounts, okay, of the $1.5 trillion. Climate. Lawmakers set aside more than $20 billion for climate research and resiliency efforts. Okay, no surprise there. Other scientific research. Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health. It's a new agency, $1 billion to stand up the new office with the NIH. It's going to study diseases such as ALS, Alzheimer's, diabetes, and cancer. So federal firefighting. Here we've got $2 billion from the Wildfire Suppression Operations Reserve. DHS, sir, here's a real amount. Lawmakers allocated $57.5 billion to the Homeland Security Department, an increase of about 10%, so on and so forth. But you get the idea that when you try to break down by amount to figure out where the $1.5 trillion is, you just saw the biggest one was not even $60 billion.
Right.
So where is all this money going?
So the problem I have whenever I grapple with a story like this is if you've worked through all the missing money and then Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board Statement 56, what you realize is any disclosure available from the federal government on how much it's spending and what it's doing, it's not reliable. So
no.
There's no point there's no point, you know, in the old days I would jump in and I'd get the whatever Congress passed and whatever the congressional justifications and all the background information. I'd go through it and figure out the numbers. But the problem is now the numbers don't mean anything. So so I'm not surprised when these folks are confused. You know, so yeah. I don't think their confusion is just because they're not doing a good job. I think, or that AI is writing the article. I think the confusion is, you know, the information provided to them is intentionally confusing.
That Wall Street Journal article, I read it. I had a headache over the 15 points.
I'm going to stop sending you Wall Street Journal articles because you get so upset.
Well, it's like I'm reading 5 minutes about $15.6 billion, $13.6 billion. They're arguing it was a... And then I'm like, wait a minute, this is 1% of the...
You're 1. Just like, I don't send you the Economist articles. They're worse.
Anyway.
Okay.
Next story on FedWatch. This is from New South Wales. Okay.
This is bad. The floods in Australia have just been unprecedented.
Yeah. New South Wales and Queensland flood ravaged areas told not to rebuild. Remember I said we'd come back to BP? Take a look at this picture here. I was like, wow, that's a major flood. But at least they've got their little, at least they've got a little dock here. You can see it down here.
Right.
Right? That's not a dock. That's the top of a BP station.
Holy smokes.
You see that?
Holy smokes, you're right. I hadn't realized that when I looked at this.
Yeah. I was like, oh, at least they got a little provisional.
Holy smokes.
That's not a makeshift dock. That's the top of a gas station.
Wow.
Because you can see the sign right here. Right. I can't get my highlighter is not behaving today. Anyway, but let me back out of that. So,
John,
Zoom. Isn't that amazing? National Recovery and Resilience Agency Coordinator General Shane Stone has stated the taxpayer and the ratepayer cannot continue to pick up the bill for these huge catastrophic damage events. The current floods are considered to be rarer than once in a lifetime, but we're not going to pick up the bill. And then the author of this article says, do the state and federal governments have plans to reuse or land grab these regions? That's like a once in a lifetime flood. And they're like, you know, we can't, sorry, we're not going to reimburse you for that. We can't help you. You know, what a crazy story, huh?
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? That picture?
That is an amazing. I hadn't realized that when I looked at it. I looked at that picture several times. It never occurred to me that was a top of a BP station.
I thought, well, at least they're getting that's a place to dock boats temporarily. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Oof.
Yeah, good luck getting your gas, you know. Anyway, next story in FedWatch. It's another Wall Street Journal special. This one's pretty straightforward. Biden bans imports of Russian oil and natural gas. And zoom in here. The U.S. immediately prohibited new Russian shipments of oil, certain petroleum products, liquefied natural gas, and coal under an executive order Mr. Biden signed Tuesday. About 8% of U.S. imports of oil and refined products, or about 672,000 barrels a day, came from Russia last year. The ban primes gasoline prices to soar even higher and will likely, there's a chance it will pinch American households already being tested by the highest inflation in decades. But get this, a wide majority of Americans, almost 80%, said they favored a ban on Russian oil imports, even if the prohibition increased energy prices in the U.S., according to data from a new Wall Street Journal poll, why 13% said they oppose it. Okay, so what's going on there?
So you have the shriek-o-meter turned one way and the reality of their situation turned another way. You had the, I think I mentioned this last week, the German economics minister say that if they stopped importing Russian oil and gas, it would destroy, would create conditions that would destroy social cohesion. He was basically saying you can't do that. But the Shriekometer is definitely doing everything they can to make it politically popular to cancel Russian oil and gas.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a pretty loud Shriekometer for 80% of the population to agree to shoot itself in the foot with higher gas.
It's a very loud Shriekometer. And what's sad about it is it's not that the markets can adjust instantaneously, but over time, what you're going to see is you're going to see more Russian and oil and gas go east, or certainly more Russian oil go east. And, you know, and the market adjusts globally. And so it's going to be the U.S. is the loser.
Yeah. So yes, the U.S. is the loser.
Right. So remember when I said last week, the Brits and the Commonwealth countries and China are the winner? Well,
yes.
After a week, it's just looking more that way. So I told you the Brits came out and announced, oh, what a coincidence. Now that we've come out of Brexit.
Right.
And now that the Germans have canceled Russian oil and gas and committed and have shut down their nukes, we're announcing we found this huge gas field in the North Sea.
Yeah.
And BP just happens to have the sales agreement. And now the gas prices are higher. So we can.
Yeah.
And now Britain is swimming in gas and Germany's in trouble, but the UK is looking great. What?
It's win-win for the UK.
What a remarkable coincidence.
Now we know why Sir Smirks-a-Lot was so happy at the Oxford Union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sir,
right.
So I told you, I think the Brits have figured this one out. So
it looks that way.
Yeah.
All right. I think the last story in FedWatch, this is from Zoltan Pozsar, who, as a reminder, is with Credit Suisse. He's formerly of the New York Fed. He's the expert on monetary plumbing in general. And on repos in particular. This article, this bulletin called Bretton Woods 3. It's kind of a PDF, so I can't really highlight it. And I'm just going to scroll down to the money shot at the very end here on page 4. And it is not working again. The crisis is not like anything we have seen since President Nixon took the U.S. dollar off gold in 1971. The end of the era of commodity-based money. Okay. When the crisis and the war is over, U.S. dollar should be much weaker. And on the flip side, the renminbi is much stronger. Let's say the yuan is much stronger, backed by a basket of commodities. From Bretton Woods era, he divides it into three periods. From the Bretton Woods era, backed by gold bullion, that's up to 1971, to Bretton Woods II, backed by inside money, meaning treasuries and unhedged, but really meaning treasuries and reserves. To Bretton Woods 3, this is the new era we're going into now, backed by outside money. So Pozsar saying it's going to be gold, bullion, and other commodities that's going to back the new world reserve currency. That's what he's saying there.
And I'm not sure I agree with that. I think gold will play a big role, but I don't think it'll be a gold-backed standard. But there's no doubt where he's right is this. You know, we just rang the bell for a much weaker dollar. Now, U.S. dollar index is going up. That's short term. The system is weakening.
Yeah, and he's saying, you know, that it's other commodities, though. It's not just gold.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this is about real versus unreal.
Yeah.
Right. So, who not only has real assets, but who can make the world go? Who can make things, who can build things, who can get things to market 5 days faster than who else.
Right.
So this is all about performance in the real world, doing real things.
It's a notable story, though, because this Zoltan Pozsar is from the New York Fed, which is kind of a lifetime
And he was
office.
At the Treasury for a time, I think, too.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
But the New York Fed is a significant position to me. He's in New York. He knows how the system works.
Right. Interestingly enough, he's Hungarian.
Yeah.
Or, you know, originally Hungarian. So it's funny. All my friends from Eastern Europe are much more knowledgeable about what's going on and have an easier time tracking it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't grow up in the bubble.
Yeah.
But clearly he understands the monetary plumbing. So He's gotten a lot of attention because people, what he's saying resonates with people in the financial markets, right?
No, they listen to him because he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
You know, they positioned him as being like a knowledgeable guy. That's what I mean. He came out before the September 2019 meltdown in the repo market and said there's going to be a meltdown in the repo market. He was saying that like in March and April of 2019.
Yeah, my only question, were they planning a meltdown in the repo market?
That's what I'm saying. He was positioned as the expert on that.
Yeah.
So when he says something like this, whether he was positioned or not, he might have been. We just don't know.
We don't know.
You better listen to what he's saying, because if it comes true, that's a big deal.
Well, anyway. But here's the thing. You have a lot of very smart people from different aspects and lines of the independent financial world who are all agreeing to the same thing. This will make the dollar system weaker.
Yes.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Okay, let's round out FedWatch with a couple of videos. First one is Victoria Nuland talking about the biolabs. Okay?
Right.
Here we go. Let me back up. Let me preface this by saying she was asked the question point blank, I think, by Rubio.
Marco Rubio in the Senate testimony.
He asked her point blank, does the Ukraine have, bioweapons laboratories? Okay? It's just yes, no question. She should have just said no, moved on. She doesn't say that. Here's her answer.
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
Okay, so you get it there. Yeah, there are biolaboratories, but they're taken over by Russians. So if they're used, it's going to be Russia's using them.
So what struck me about that testimony is how nervous she is.
Yeah.
And she's equivocating her answer, but she's not lying straight up, because that would be a criminal. That's a felony. If you lie to Congress in something like this,
right.
She's in real legal danger. And she's a woman who's got significant enemies, so she can't afford to play games on this. And it was interesting. I had one subscriber write in and say, well, how do you know it's really true? Well, because there's been lots of DOD disclosure on their website about, they're using taxpayers' money to build these places.
Right.
So, and to run them. So this is not a secret. The situation has brought attention to them, but there's lots of disclosure on this. In fact, Tucker Carlson did a good video where we went back into the Wayback Machine and got lots of different copies of sort of the description of some of the labs in the Ukraine. But Nuland is clearly very nervous, which is not her way.
Yeah, because she's saying, yes, we have biolaboratories funded by the U.S., at least 26 of them in the Ukraine. And she immediately segues into, let's not make it about we have biolabs. It's that Russia's going to use them. But she confirms that, yeah, we have the labs over there.
Right. But if you look at what they have in those labs, I don't know what it is. I can only guess. But my guess is she's terrified of what's going to come out now. The Russians have access to information of not only what the labs were doing, but what applied experiments the labs might have done in the Ukraine or elsewhere with what they had.
Yeah.
So I think Nuland's scared for a reason. I don't think we've begun to hear. I think there's a lot more that could come out here.
Could be. And I don't think she's worried about, lying to Congress.
Oh, I do.
But
I do.
Okay.
Because when you have enemies who are gunning for you, they're looking for a parking ticket.
Right.
And what you've got to do is not give them a parking ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think she is worried about, because she's a woman with real enemies who are looking for a scapegoat.
Yeah, that's the key.
Right.
The people at the front lines.
You don't think Hillary Clinton wouldn't love to hang this all on Victoria Nuland?
Maybe, yeah, right.
Well, here's the thing. We'll get to it, but the Russians have put sanctions on Clinton, Biden, Hunter Biden, And we know, or we believe, that huge money laundering has been going on through the Ukraine.
Right.
And what we don't know is whether those sanctions, if the Russian invading now have access to all sorts of banking information about Nuland and Clinton and Hunter Biden and what they were up to in the Ukraine and their offshore accounts from the Ukraine and Ukraine money laundering.
Yeah, wouldn't that be interesting? I kind of doubt that, but you can't write off that as a possibility.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, next story, this World Economic Forum. This is a Klaus Schwab flunky, a doctor, talking about whether human DNA can be hacked. Listen to this. I'll play it, run about a minute of it.
Many tyrants and governments wanted to do it, but nobody understood biology well enough. And nobody had enough computing power and data to hack millions of people. Neither the Gestapo nor the KGB could do it. But soon, at least some corporations and governments will be able to systematically hack all the people. We humans should get used to the idea that we are no longer mysterious souls. We are now hackable animals. Data might enable human elites to do something even more radical than just build digital dictatorships. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. Because once you can hack something, you can usually also engineer it. And if indeed we succeed in hacking and engineering life, this will be not just the greatest revolution in the history of humanity. This will be the greatest revolution in biology since the very beginning of life, 4 billion years ago.
Yeah, so those old school gangsters like, you know, Gestapo, they couldn't right. hack human beings, but we can do it.
Right. Right, yeah. And I one of the reasons I wanted to show you or show this video, again, it's hard for many people to understand how nuts these guys are. But,
yeah,
you know, the great thing about Harry is he makes it clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a crazy clip right there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To him, humans are just animals.
And yeah.
What's interesting is he has grown up in all the blessings of the bubble and doesn't understand that what he's proposing is to destroy the things, you know, all the things that he counts on as civilization, you know, he's planning on destroying, and he doesn't seem to compute what that means.
Yeah, well, he's just, I like his pitch too. It's like, well, this Gestapo, they were just pikers. Well, we've got it right. We've got the real power.
Right.
They didn't know what they were doing, but we've got control. This is us going all the way back to the dawn of time. We got you now.
Did I ever tell you my fantasy of rehabilitating the elites? I wanted to create a program where they all had to work basically as cleaning ladies and janitorial staff for Super 8 Motel.
Yeah.
Put them to work for two years having to support themselves that way. And then when they're through, they can write essays on what is a deplorable.
That's a great rehab program. That's a,
oh, I have a lot of great ideas for rehab.
It much needed. Okay. Let's move on to CBDC and crypto. This is another kind of article here that points away from the U.S. Biden to order U.S. agencies to work on future digital dollar. Look at the language used here. U.S. President Joe Biden will order government agencies to begin work on creating a digital U.S. dollar. The U.S. effort will study the benefits and potential risks while placing urgency on research and development of a potential U.S. CBDC. Biden's order will require the U.S. Treasury Department, the Commerce Department, and other key agencies to prepare reports on the future of money and the role of cryptocurrencies. It's all of the stuff that we're going to do, not that we're doing. In January, the U.S. Federal Reserve kicked the question of whether the United States should pursue a digital dollar to Congress, leading analysts to predict such a project would take years. And that's really all you need to know. The U.S. is sort of, looks like to me, dragging their heels on
they're
the U.S. digital dollar.
They're definitely going slow on this.
Yeah.
And the big issue, of course, is if Powell is serious that they need authorizing legislation, that takes time. So, and But I think if the Republicans win back the House, and you know, so you have a Republican House and Senate, it wouldn't surprise me if then Powell moves to get authorizing legislation. But I read this a different way, what Biden did. What I'm reading between the WHO treaty and the push on vaccine passports and the what Biden did on essentially cryptocurrencies is they are eager to get a control grid into place.
Yeah.
They need a control grid that can force people to accept lots of injections and to do whatever they're told and move to a radically lower economic footprint. They want to instill, they want to introduce extreme austerity, and they need a control grid to do it.
I agree with the austerity. I don't think that story, though.
No, I don't think the story, yeah. the person writing that has no clue what this is about.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to understand that a reporter doesn't know what they talk about, just if the word innovation is in the article, it means they don't know what they're talking about. You know, so we're going to do cryptocurrencies because it's time to be innovative and think about the future of money and, you know, right. So, but I think the reason that this is being pushed is they need the control grid for austerity. And they don't really care whether it's passports, digital IDs, CBDs, you know, all these things are a piece of the control grid. What they want and need is the control grid.
Yeah, big time.
Right.
The austerity is coming. We'll get to that another
They're
time.
Hurting the bureaucracy into getting them the control grid.
Yeah, the austerity is for sure coming.
Right.
All right, keep it going on CBDC. Next story is from Zero Hedge. Coinbase cuts off 25,000 Russian wallets over allegations they're engaged in illicit activity. Coinbase has now gone and done just the opposite. It shut down 25,000 wallets belonging to Russian customers due to suspicions, whose suspicions is anyone's guess, about illicit activity. Coinbase's chief legal officer announced the largest U.S. crypto exchange had banned access for sanctioned individuals. But keep in mind, we won't ban all of Russian users, Brian Armstrong says, the CEO. He said earlier, some ordinary Russians are using crypto as a lifeline now that their currency has collapsed, so we don't want to hurt them. Armstrong said earlier this month that Coinbase wouldn't act against individual Russians unless sanctions specifically instructed them to do so. So query who the 25,000 people are. But in any case, just as we've seen in the U.S., the Federal Reserve freeze assets belonging to Russia, the reserves, now Coinbase is up to the same tricks, right? It's a private company freezing your assets.
Right.
That's how is that not conversion? How is that not straight up theft? How is that not being prosecuted by some agency, by the DOJ?
Well, it's back to the issue that you talked about with sovereignty. If there's no law.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible to have money if there's no law? I don't think so. I mean, I think money is a human construct based in contract law. And if there's no law.
Right.
Money can't exist without law and there's no law.
Right. So, if there's no rule of law, what you have at best is someone's permission.
Well, if I'm a slave, am I protected by the rule of law? I mean,
no, you're not.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're a slave, though, there is no rule of law.
Right. But we're talking about a system where permission can be changed moment to moment on a whim.
That's what I mean.
Right.
That's what I mean.
Right.
You have someone's permit. You have someone's discretion.
Right.
You're at your mercy of other people. And that's not the rule of law.
Well, it's funny. I was just rereading your description of, you know, the difference between a deposit being debt versus cash being money.
Yeah.
And you know, we're basically talking about that kind of debt system where the rules can be changed arbitrarily and capriciously at any moment for no reason.
Right. 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 And your quote money can be wiped out. Real money doesn't behave like that. Real money's permanent.
Right. So, I don't know. I've always, this has been my big question since 1991, which is, how is this supposed to work? I've never been able to understand how this was supposed to work. Because, you know, when I first went to Washington, you had this covert world and you had this overworld, and the overworld pretended that there was the rule of law, and then the covert world snuck around and took advantage of things.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now it's integrated and there's no effort to, you know, to protect the overworld. But to me, once everybody realizes, okay, there's no law for the bankers, so why should I? You know, the only thing I can do by following the law is be a patsy. Then how's that supposed to continue or work? It doesn't work. And in part, that may be what this invasion is really about.
Hold that thought. Let's go to the next story. Turning to Farmageddon. Maybe that's what this is all about. Let's look at the next story. This is from Natural News. Pretty straightforward. Ukrainians fleeing Putin fall right in the hands of vaccine Nazis in Germany, where all refugees are being fully jabbed. Germany is welcoming Ukrainian refugees fleeing the war zone, but under one condition, that they all get vaccinated for the Wuhan coronavirus upon entry to the country. This is the German health minister, Karl Lauterbach, is driving this. Lauterbach is the same guy that, when confronted by the facts in response to his earlier false claim that Germany was suffering through a pandemic of the unvaccinated, blamed his mistake on a software error. Since only about one-third of Ukrainians have gotten jabbed for the Fauci flu, according to the Federal Ministry of Health, Lauterbach has his work cut out for him, getting injections into Ukrainian arms. The pandemic is over, to be clear, at least the mask and jab portion of it. Now the globalists have moved on to the war and starvation phase. Lauterbach and others like him want to keep the injection phase alive and force jab any remaining holdouts who just said no to pharmaceutical cocktails. Not good.
Not good.
Yeah.
I just pray for the Ukrainian people. You know, they've had a very difficult 30 years, and it's not getting better.
No.
No.
You go to this maniac, Lauterbach, just a liar, saying, oh, you have to be injected to come in? You want your political safe haven? You know, you gotta take some poison first.
So I don't remember, are we going to have, I think we're covering Ed Dowd's latest chart, correct?
Next.
Okay, so let's look at that, and then I'll say
Okay. This is it's kind of like a tweet from Ed Dowd, although it's not Twitter. It's Getter. The millennial generation experienced 61,000 excess deaths in the second half of 2021. That is a Vietnam War event, meaning, you know, 59,000 U.S. soldiers died in Vietnam. And here is his graph that you're talking about, excess deaths from people 25 to 44. And you can see it's just a huge spike up here as you move on into 2022. So there you go.
So I told you I spoke with a German doctor last week who said he thought significant death was resulting by absence of access to healthcare.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't just the injections. But there's no doubt, if you look at the numbers, it's important to understand whether it's the Skidmore survey or the charts and material that the insurance analyst that Ed Dowd is working with. All these numbers indicate very significant deaths and disease from these injections, and there's no change in policy in government. Governments are ordering more boosters, and the control grid shows that they're planning. They know now with this level of deaths and disease that they need a control grid to continue to force inject people. And that's what they want to do, and that's what they're going to do. And I will tell you, John, I don't think they care how many people they kill.
No. And they need to wipe out people who are drawing on expensive programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Right.
I'm working on a video on that, but we'll get to that another time.
Right.
The other source of death, so it's not just injections. It's also, you know, a lot of people died as a result of just lockdowns and not having
access.
Yeah. Not getting regular exercise. Could have been any number of things.
Right.
But they all tend to point in one direction, which is they're offing people.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Next, there's another tweet. It's another from Getter, Dr. Naomi Wolf. She's like, oh my God. Dr. Walensky's husband, Lauren Walensky, received a $16.5 million grant from Health and Human Services for a company he co-founded. It has received no other grants 2 years in. So huge conflict of interest there.
I just want to point out, Lenski is in charge of the CDC, which says there have been 9 deaths from COVID injections.
Come again?
9.
That's what the CDC's
official position, as of the Skidmore, the publication of the Skidmore survey 2 or 3 weeks ago, the CDC's position is there has been 9 deaths from the COVID-19 injection.
God, did someone please tell me that whoever said that had a paper bag over their head?
No, they didn't. No? They had $16.5 million in their husband's company.
Yeah, they had $16.5 million in their own. Yeah, you got it. That's terrible. But you can see the graft in operation here with this right. whole pandemic. It's just, it's over the top.
Right.
$16.5 million. That's the only, it's right. the only well, source of revenue
why,
that
that's
company.
That's why, you know, the $1.5 trillion omnibus bill, that buys a lot of husbands, right?
Yeah. Indeed it does, Catherine.
Yes, it does.
Indeed it does. Yes. All right, last story on Farmageddon. Let's go to this is a depressing story. Army approves first religious exemption for COVID vaccine. Okay, let me try that.
Yeah, I just read, in fact, the Marines have now approved 6.
Yeah, it's very, very low, these numbers. Army officials announced Friday that the service had approved its first religious exemption for the COVID-19 vaccine mandate, making it the final military service to approve such an accommodation. And then you look at these numbers. The vast, I'm just going to skip over this chart. This, people need to learn how to present numerical information and just cut to the text. The vast majority of religious accommodation requests have been denied or are still awaiting decision. The bottom line, though, 97% of the active duty force has been vaccinated or began the shot series. And that's just that. The Army is just plunging full steam ahead. Oh, by the way, get this. In some cases, judges have issued preliminary injunctions that have stopped the military from punishing certain groups of troops whose requests for accommodation have been denied. One such service member, this is a big tell here about what's going on. One such service member is a Navy destroyer's commanding officer, and the Navy is arguing in federal court that they cannot deploy the warship without removing him from command. Got nothing to do with health, safety, military preparedness. It's all about get that vaccine into arms, no matter what.
Here's my question. While we're trying to destroy the dollar, are we trying to destroy the U.S. military as well?
The answer to that is yes.
Right.
Clearly, yes. We now have, the military is now really like the 73rd, you know, transgender woke brigade, which right. is why we're not lifting a finger in the Ukraine. Just letting, you know, we're not going to have any boots on the ground there. They'll get slaughtered.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they've completely diluted the military. Now they're poisoning the military.
Right, but I think it's not an accident at all. For anybody in the world to understand that this is a, you know, we have a, I mean, it really is an internal coup by the U.S. establishment.
Yes,
and it's been that way since 1995. But they are liquidating their dollar position, they are liquidating their military, and they are liquidating their population.
They're liquidating their human assets. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Bad all around. Okay, to happier topics, push back and take action. I don't know whether you want to play the video on this at all. This is Tucker Carlson, who had on his show in MM.
Oh, I think we ought to play this.
Okay. All right.
I think we just play the part with Bryce.
Yeah, okay. So let me get this going here.
This is some of the best news I've seen. His name is Bryce Mitchell, and he's an Arkansas boy. You know, I live close to Arkansas in Hickory Valley, so.
Okay.
I kind of feel like this is my hometown boy. Okay.
Okay. All right. So there's a little intro by Tucker, and then we'll hear from Bryce. This is really good. Let me zoom in a little bit here, and then play here.
So of all the people you've seen weigh in on Ukraine, maybe none has put the American position more succinctly or expressed it more wisely than a man called Bryce Mitchell. We played a portion of his comments on this show yesterday. Bryce Mitchell is a cattle farmer from Arkansas. He's also a fairly well-known UFC fighter. Last week, he was asked, what do you think about Ukraine? And here's part of what he said.
I'm not going nowhere to fight none of these wars for these politicians. I'm staying at home, and when the war comes to Arkansas, I will dig my boots in the ground, and I will die for everything I love, and I will not retreat. If this country's invaded and everybody's saying, well, we gotta evacuate, I will not. I will dig my boots in the Arkansas soil, and I will fight for the people that I love, for the land that I love, and the way of life that I love. But I'm not going overseas to fight. I don't know what's going on.
A lot of people you see on TV would leave instantly if we were invaded. There's been polling on it. It shows it pretty clearly. You should pay attention to the people who wouldn't leave, who'd fight for their country and for their people, the ones they love. Bryce Mitchell's obviously in that category. He won his fight on Saturday, we should tell you. He promised to give half the purse to a charity in Arkansas to help children with medical conditions. We are honored to have Bryce Mitchell join us tonight. Bryce, thanks so much for coming on and for what you said. I haven't seen anybody express it better than you did. Why did you say that?
Well, thank you so much for having me, brother. And I said that because that's the first thing that I thought when he asked me, and I was trying to give him the best answer that I could. And that's just my genuine thoughts on the subject.
So that's Bryce. Yeah,
he just so you didn't pick up his quote where he says, "I'm not going to fight for Hunter Biden." Then he said, yeah. All these people are treasonous. They're just making money, and you know, there's a couple of unbelievable choice quotes from him. He's going to be a hero of the week, I think, next week. But
great.
I think the reason I find this so positive is what it tells me is the Shriekometer has finally failed. Enough people, there's an immunity growing of people who've had it with the corruption, and they see it for what it is, and they're not falling for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And you're getting more and more, I don't know, MMF, that's a different crowd.
A different crowd. Also, you know, just because a Wall Street Journal poll says 79% of America goes to the right doesn't mean that's true. Right?
That's a great point, and one we should have raised earlier, that when the journal says it's 79% of people are, you know, in favor of that, that's to be taken with two tons of salt.
Do you have any idea how many Americans I know, if they got a phone call for a survey, they would feed back, you know, they would affirm whatever they think the Shriekometer wants to hear. Not because that's what they believe or feel, but because they know they're under surveillance.
Right. But I would take the 79% with a grain of salt.
I'd take it with a huge grain of salt.
Yeah, exactly. All right, last story. This is in Diluting the Brand. And the last story before we turn to charts. This is like, you remember we had, don't let game day be interrupted by a heart attack, you know, with blood clots. Remember
that?
This
is the worst. Okay. This is bad.
This takes the cake, okay? This leaves that behind and sets a new low standard, okay? Let's hit it. This is from the Toronto Sun. Daylight savings may increase chance of heart disease and strokes, according to studies. You have to be kidding me. Scientific research has found that the transition to daylight savings time, which takes place Sunday, could be linked to heart disease and strokes, according to a report from the American Heart Association. You know, so in other words, you may see more heart attacks this year over last year. We don't really know the specific reason for increases in heart disease and stroke during daylight savings time change, but it likely has something to do with a disruption to the body's internal clock or its circadian rhythm, they say. So they're guessing there. It would have nothing to do with the fact that injections were introduced last year and rolled out on a massive basis. That's not even broached. It's just changes in daylight savings time, and they never address, like, well, why didn't changes in daylight savings time for the last, I don't know, 250 years caused people to have heart attacks. Why now?
Right.
Are you kidding me? Are people that dumb to read something like that and believe it? You have to be kidding me.
So I would say it's not that they're dumb. It's that facing what needs to be faced here is so frightening that I think a lot of people who are busy and tired and feeling overwhelmed will reach out just for anything so that they can keep on going. Do you know what I mean? I think looking at the facts is pretty scary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they can't imagine, you know, You set the clock ahead and, you know, kill grandma.
Well, but think of it. You know, Ed Dowd does a very good job on some of his interviews of saying, you know, there are a lot of hedge fund managers who got tricked into taking the two boosters, and they're upset. They're angry. So yeah. If you've taken, you know, one, two, or three shots, and you sit down to watch the doctors for COVID ethics symposium 1, 2, and 3, that's a terrifying experience.
Yeah, right. Right. You can't be feeling too good if you find out what's going on.
Right.
It's like after you had your second booster.
Right.
Like, what
so
is
So if
my
your
bloodstream?
Best friend has a heart attack, wouldn't you rather think it was daylight saving times than the booster that you also took? Right.
Yeah, fair enough. There's the fortress of denial there is strong.
Right.
Yeah. It's as strong as it gets, actually. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, turn into charts. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. That's it.
So I continue to watch PayPal and Square just fall off the face of the earth. And I continue to try and figure out what this is about. But my read is, you know, whatever they're planning for the CBDC control grid, you know, whether it's wiping out small business or going to a transaction control, they're not anticipating that Square and PayPal is going to be the winner. And interestingly enough, Coinbase down 52% for the,
yeah.
This is the last year. So this is a year chart. So we're seeing the payment systems significantly underperform and really fall out of bed. So
yeah,
I think a lot of the fintech guys are going to be the losers in the control grid. Because let's face it, you put into place, John, a complete financial control grid, and there's a tremendous number of companies that no longer need to exist. Anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. PayPal and Square and Coinbase all down very significantly.
Yeah. Getting crushed.
Right.
Okay. Next chart.
Okay. So I just wanted to look at how the U.S. market was trading versus Europe, India, and China. So China down very significantly for the year, and China just really fell out of bed in the last month, down a lot, and
yeah,
just in the last
20%.
Couple of days. So you can see the kind of the separation is causing real pain in the short term. Interestingly enough, India up for the year, just a tiny bit, not as much as the S&P. And then
right.
VGK down 6.44%. That's the European ETF. So what we've been seeing for years is the U.S. outperforming Europe and U.S. outperforming Asia. In this case, outperforming the Chinese by a lot. This is the equity markets, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, go to the next one.
Yep.
Okay, so I just wanted to take a look at interest rates. We're looking at the yields for the 30-year and the 10-year. But obviously yields are going up. Now, you're coming off of a base of basically no interest rates. So a little bit of rise on a percentage basis looks like a lot. You know, to me, if you look at interest rates, they still have not moved. We're having lots of threats that the Fed is going to take interest rates up 8 to 12 times, you know, in the next year or two. So I don't know how that's going to happen unless they're ready to really wreak havoc with the sovereign governments and put them deeply into a debt trap. But
I don't think they're going to do. They might knock it up here or there, but not very much. They can't.
Yeah, they can. I mean, if you're ready to do radical reengineering, you can.
Yeah, that's true. It was certainly the increased interest payment on the debt would justify greater austerity. Under that scenario.
Right. So if you look at what's happened with the sort of splitting of the financial system by Russia, China, and India, this split we're talking about, you know, that's radical, and they could be ready to getting to being very, very radical. Because one of the few strengths the U.S. has is if they put everybody into a dollar trap on their debt, you know, they're going to be able to exercise massive, massive power if they can back it up militarily. So could they be ready to really put the squeeze on the emerging markets? Yeah, they could. We
wow.
just have to see.
The increasing interest rates would be insane now, but yeah, it's all
It depends.
On the table.
If you have a control grid, you can do anything you want.
Right. But you yeah, that's complicated. But you, yeah, you have to have a lot of control in place before
right.
you do
you
that.
You have to have huge control in place.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. U.S. dollar.
So the U.S. dollar is flying short term. But, you know, I'm with Mish and Zoltan. I think long term, we've seen Russia, China, the emerging markets, the BRIC nations work for years to build liquidity and resilience outside the dollar system. And that's going to come to fruition. So I think this is a short-term phenomena.
Huh. So you think that that's we're looking at peak or near peak there on the right?
No, the dollar could go much higher. The U.S. dollar index could go much higher in the short run, depending on what happens in the Ukraine. I think my biggest fear is not that interest rates go up a lot or the U.S. dollar index flies up and puts everybody in a bear trap. My fear is that to continue to goad Russia, you know, the equivalent of the neocons are going to do things that bring on World War III.
Yeah. Well, that's a risk.
Right.
Okay. Let's keep it going. Here we go. So here's our favorite chart. I just want to point out, you know, the ones we always look at, VIX at 51.24.
Now, this last week, to me is the most important thing on this chart.
Yep. The last week, the VIX was at about 34 and a half. And now it's at 51. So it's,
right.
it's way
and
up.
3 weeks ago, it was down in the red, where it's been for almost a decade.
Where it was way down here.
Right.
Right. Okay. So that's the one we look at. Another one we like to look at here. The other one we look at is lumber. And lumber is 34.54. That's actually down from last week when it was about 42. So
right.
That's interesting. Everything else, you know, the natural gas, the wheat, coffee is up again. Everything else is kind of the same. But the VIX and the lumber, they seem to move around more than the rest of them for whatever reason.
Okay, so I would like to point out if you're the Brits and the Commonwealth nations, you're feeling good because you have less Ukraine wheat to compete with. Everybody needs your wheat. And you just announced a huge natural gas find. So you're rolling in gas.
Yeah.
Right after the Germans have cut off their Nord 2 certification. So, and you're sitting on all that money in the offshore havens. You're happy.
Does the market believe that find of gas? Wouldn't the prices be down a little bit?
No, because you don't have enough supply coming on in the short run.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
Anyway, that's kind of it for charts for us.
Okay. Well, I have to say this was not our most cheerful money in markets, John.
No. It was not. Oh, but wait. We have one. We have a cartoon, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we'll cut to the cartoon.
Yeah.
And then. So there you go.
This is Jeremy Nell, who does our cartoons. It's hilarious. This is hysterical.
He does a podcast called Germ Warfare. I've been on it. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
The Digital Control Grid, Eating Sustainable Development, Eating Fake Crises, Eating You.
Right.
In that order. Yeah. Right. There you go. And then the other thing, we've got, this is out now.
Oh, you opened your box.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I got to say, this one is sharper. I can't put my finger on it. There's something that's sharper about this publication.
We're trying to make it easy to read by breaking it into chunks.
This is next level printing technology. And it's just so sharp and so crisp. I mean, I'm really proud to have my name on. This is super sharp. It's so easy to read.
Anyway,
I mean, it is top notch.
Well, we've mailed them, so most of the print and digital subscribers should have their copy. And of course, the PDF is available on the website if you're digital. So the digital version is there. You can always print it out, or you can buy more copies at the shop. But they worked very hard on that one. So
it part looks of it fantastic. It looks so good.
Doing everything you can with the graphics and the publishing to make it easy to understand and read something that's pretty, you know, it's a pretty heavy topic. So
Do you know what they did differently? This one's like, you know, it's like the
they
future.
They do spend
of
a lot more time trying to format and organize it into chunks. So they're trying to, you know, here's this chunk, take a break. Here's this chunk, take a break.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's really, really nice.
There are
a
couple things I wanted to mention on the website. So we had a special report, Dr. Meryl Nass, who has been a wonderful help to all the different doctors groups to help them sort of understand the FDA regulation and what's been going on in the FDA. She became an expert about the FDA during her work on the anthrax vaccine, very, very knowledgeable about the history of sort of FDA and vaccines. Anyway, the main board is now trying to pull her license because she made the mistake of, she has a lot of experience in history with ivermectin long before COVID-19. And she prescribed it for people. And of course, it's a problem if you save people instead of poisoning them. So Meryl and I did a special report. That's a public interview. And you can come to the special report section. The other was we have a wonderful expert on the sort of global geopolitics, Carl von Wolfram, here in the Netherlands. He was a journalist who spent many years in Asia and has some of the most significant books on Asia and how on Japan and how, once called the Enigma of Japanese Power, very knowledgeable. Then he came back and was a professor here in the Netherlands. And when COVID started, he got mad and started a magazine. I said, I'm going to jump in the car, Robert. And I went down to his house and just, you know, it's a long discussion on all the different threads that come together in the Ukraine. So that's up there on a special report. And I want to encourage you to, you know, those are public and are free for, you know, share and send out. Anyway, lots of good stuff. If you haven't ever checked the What's New section, just go to What's New. And we're trying to do a good job on our Telegram channel of always posting the, you know, sort of what's coming up and what's new. Anyway, so lots of good stuff. I can't wait for you to see next week's hero. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. It's a cafe in Vienna.
Wow.
Yeah. Good cakes.
Yeah.
Okay, right. John. Have a great week. Thank you for joining us on Money and Markets, ladies and gentlemen. And don't worry, we're not going to send you to the Ukraine.
Yeah. Dial down the shrieker meter.
Yeah.
Turn off those TVs. Yeah. All right,
please,
Catherine.
If you haven't given away, do you have a TV, John?
No, I don't own one.
No wonder. No wonder. I so like you. Okay. Have a great week. Yeah.
All right, Catherine. See you next week.